Welcome. It's Christmas, a.k.a. Oscar nomination morning. Did you get a lump of coal in your stocking? Or gifts? Shiny new gifts that you're excited about? That's what we're here to discuss. I'm Nathaniel, and I'm here with my co-host, Murtala.
Hi, everyone. Welcome to the Oscar nominations Film Experience podcast. Sorry to this man, apparently. Lots of men. Lots of white people. 19 out of 20 nominees in the acting categories are white. The Academy does not recognize acting, apparently, from people who are not white, except if they are playing Harriet Tubman.
But the power of biopics. See, also Charlize Theron.
In the year of Lupita Nyong'o and Alfie Woodard, that Megyn Kelly nomination, I cannot withstand it. But anyway, let's get into it.
I guess we're starting with Best Actress. I thought we were going elsewhere, but okay, Best Actress. So the nominations went mostly as expected there. Not as I predicted, because I was being crazy and brave and predicted Lupita.
Yeah.
I honestly thought her campaign was strong enough. I mean, she was really out there, and it was a smart campaign, and people love her, but I guess the horror bias was just too much for them to overcome.
Yeah, I mean, and also it's just the performance is great, plus the campaign. The performance was there. Yet, no, the SNL skit that Charlize is doing, that pantomime of Megyn Kelly, gets nominated over Lupita's best performance. And Alfred Woodard, a respected actor of 40 years, does not get in for, like, a performance that she's probably not going to give again, because who else is going to give her a movie like Clemency was to showcase her talent?
Well, I'd agree with you there, and nobody is, especially because people didn't support the movie. Maybe if people had supported the movie, but its own distributor completely dumped it. But that's a whole another discussion. I actually don't share your feelings, your very, very negative feelings about Charlize Theron. I think she's very good in Bombshell, but she didn't need to be nominated for it.
Yeah.
I don't think the movie's good, but I think she's very good in it. But that's sort of like the story of a lot of best actress candidates over the years. Like, they're better than their movies. But that doesn't mean they should be nominated, because sometimes you have both, where the performance is really good and the movie's also good, like Lupita Nyong'o, which we have to say again.
Yeah, Lupita was amazing, and that should have, to your point about the campaign, it was a well-run campaign. She leads the critic winners as the actress with the most wins from critics, and still.
Yeah, I mean, I think Best Actress in general is horrifying, but I will have to say, for something that is literally my favorite category because of my actor sexuality, I often feel that way about Best Actress. I just, for the most part, things end up in grooves very early in this category, and not just this year. And then it's really hard for people to shake up their thinking. And I do have a theory about Lupita beyond the horror bias, because they have nominated horror performances before. And my theory about that is that Critics Awards have been hopelessly diluted, and now they no longer have power. Now, you can argue that they never did fully. Like, people are like, oh, the Academy doesn't care what critics think. But I would argue that history shows that the Academy is kind of like a marriage between what critics think and what the public thinks. And they're somewhere in the middle. They have, like, elements of both, I think. But I think Critics Awards have really, really lost their power, because there's just so many of them. And so even, like, the big groups, like New York Film Critics Circle and Los Angeles Film Critics Association, like, they just end up feeling like it just ends up being all this white noise. Like, do people really pay attention when there's a different announcement, like literally five announcements a day, and from groups you haven't heard of, and a nomination announcement before the winner's announcement? I just really think that critics' advocacy has really, like, lost its power. That's my theory.
Yeah, you're probably true. And also the other true thing is just sort of like, and it goes hand in hand, I think, with what you were saying, is the continuous coverage of the Oscar and 17 million sites having the same five names. Mm-hmm. And it just sort of, as early as August, basically as early as they had Renee, Charlize, Saoirse, and Scarlett. And it was always just that, who's going to be fifth? And I'm like, the movies haven't been released yet. The people haven't seen them yet. Why did everybody decide to narrow it to just those four? And it's, you know, it's a prophecy realized. If you talk about it for 6 months with the same four names, then they're going to get the nomination.
Mm-hmm. But it also, yes, that's a problem. But also I think the Academy still deserves some jeers thrown their way because...
Oh, my God, for sure. These nominations are terrible. Yes.
But listen, they it's fully within their power, and this is true of anyone, but, you know, you can lob the same complaints against critics. It's fully within your power to go against the grain, and people just choose not to.
Yeah, absolutely.
It's fully within anyone's power to say, you know what, that's kind of dull. I think this person was way better than the names I keep hearing, so I'm going to vote for them.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, the fault lies 100% first with the Academy. But then we're just talking about what other forces got us to today.
So since I don't want this to be a total, like, bitch fest, what is there anything about Best Actress that made you happy?
I mean, I'm very happy to see Renee nominated. Of those nominees, that's my favorite performance. It's the only one... I would have nominated out of these five, so that's the only happy one. It seems that she's going to win, so I guess I'm Team Renee all the way. But yeah, I'm not happy about Best Actress at all.
So
What made you happy?
What made me happy was Scarlett Johansson, because there was a time when I thought she might be in danger, because it is... You know, it starts out, I don't think the movie is as against her as a lot of people has interpreted it as being, you know, interpreted as being like pro, Charlie and anti Nicole. But I do think that it takes a while for it to balance out, because it starts very much from his perspective, and it starts with her being sort of the one who's bringing calamity upon them. Then they both contribute to the calamity, but she is the one who makes the initial move that starts all the animosity. So I was worried that people would, you know, sometimes people have trouble with unsympathetic portrayals. And I was worried that the fact that her character has like these edges, these hostile edges, mm-hmm. would make people go, that's not a great performance, but I think it is. And for many of the reasons you stated in your piece about her, I'm actually surprised she's not one of your five, because you really liked that performance.
I did. I did like the performance. I didn't like the movie. So in general, like, my feelings about the movie since it's been released have gone down a little bit. And part of it is I am one of those people you were talking about that I thought that her character was not really given the same importance in the narrative. And maybe that's asking too much, since it is written by Noah Baumbach. It is asking too much to ask him to imagine what his partner in a divorce was going through. So the movie works. It's a good movie. It's fine. I'm not as fond. I don't think of it as fondly as I did when it's first released. And Scarlett, I like that performance. I wouldn't put it in my five, because there are other people like Adele Hanel, like Julia Sokler from Invisible Life, like Alfrey, who I've already talked about, like Lupita, like Renee, that I have put in my own critic's choices above her. And also just the fact that she got two nominations, like, way too much.
I'm fine with that, because she should have been nominated by now already, so like, make up for last time, whatever. There are a lot worse things for me to worry about, so I'm good with Scarlett's double. But
yeah, Scarlett has more nominations than all actresses of color
this year. Supporting actress, obviously, Scarlett's like a little extra there, because they really, really loved Jojo Rabbit. It showed up in all sorts of places where I'm just like, what? Why is it there? Like, production design, which to me
costumes.
To me, the production design and the editing are the weirdest. Maybe costumes a little too. Like, I'm like, really?
Yeah. But they just loved it. That's the movie they really loved.
Yeah, so, I mean, I don't think it's bad in any of its craft elements, but, like, we're talking about five best of the year. That's what you're supposed to be voting on. So anyway, to be happier, supporting actress, what are you happy about here?
Well, we can't talk about happiness before talking about J-Lo. Can we?
Well, we started negative. We started on a negative note. Let's start with positivity on this one.
I'm not happy about anything in supporting actress, actually. There are no nominees that I'm happy about. I thought Margot was better in Once Upon a Time than in Bombshell. I'm not a fan of Florence Pugh in Little Women. I'm sorry. I guess my favorite here is Laura Dern. It's nice to see Laura Dern and will finally win an Oscar. She's an actress who deserves to have an Oscar on her mantle just based on her career and all the performances that she has given. That would be great to see her. And now that J-Lo is not nominated, I'll be 100% fully behind her winning. So that's the positive.
Okay. For supporting actress, I'm very happy about Florence Pugh, which I know we have very different feelings about that performance, but I loved her in Little Women. And, you know, I don't really think either of Margot Robbie's performances this year were particularly, noteworthy in terms of saying best. That's always my thing with best. Like, before you vote, like, really think about what that word means. But on the other hand, the Oscars are also a representation of, like, a film year. And it's sometimes easier to take nominations when you think of it that way. And when you think of it that way, Margot Robbie absolutely deserves to be a nominee. She had a great year.
Yeah, absolutely, yes. I agree with that 100%.
And so Laura Dern, too, you can say the same thing about her. Like, a really good year and a really good moment in her career. I don't, because I'm trying to stay positive. I don't really want to talk about the Kathy Bates thing other than to say...
Welcome back to the club again, Oscar winner Kathy Bates. I mean, what more can you say besides that, right?
I mean, it's just, like, nominations because someone's sad and sympathetic is just...
Is it the worst one in this? Yeah,
I think so.
Yeah.
She literally is just sad and concerned. It's the stereotypical supporting concerned mom performance.
Yeah. I mean, Scarlett benefits from the fact that they love Jojo Rabbit and that you really leave that movie even if you don't like the movie, which I didn't. I liked her in it. She was good. She was sort of the grounding performance in the movie.
For sure, yeah.
But it's just not best of the year. Just because you like the movie doesn't mean you put her name in.
Yeah, this is always my thing with acting categories. Like, best picture should be a separate equation for people than best acting.
Yeah. I mean, I'll just say J-Lo was robbed. I've said everything on Twitter. I'm not going to talk about it anymore. I was so sad and dazed that the minute they said Florence Pugh, I literally did not see the next 7 categories until, you know, there was like a middle, right? They ended because they did it in 2 parts. And Best Supporting Actress was the first category they announced. And when they said Florence Pugh after Johansson, that means from J to P, they missed Lopez. And I'm just like, okay, this happened. And I didn't realize I didn't hear any of the other nominations in all the categories until they took a break and came back. And then I woke up again.
That is such a sad story. But also I understand it because the alphabetical thing really, really does, like, it can lead to very, very tense moments where you're like, oh, especially if, like, it leans, if your person is, like, last in the alphabet, because then you know, like, every person that nominated is less of a chance that they're going to be named.
Yeah.
Or if it's early, like, with Banderas, that's what I was most nervous about with him. It's like, if I hear Bale, I'm not going to hear him. That's what I was thinking, even though he's after Bale in the alphabet. And then he was the first name, so I was like, whew, I'm Best Actor. And that's all I really cared about with Best Actor.
I mean, I have to say, and the 2 things that I was really happy about today are Antonio Banderas, fantastic performance, my favorite performance of the year, recognized, congratulations, Antonio, you are amazing, I hope you win. The other thing is just all the nominations for Parasite. That was fantastic.
Yes.
Despite the fact that, of course, they didn't dare to nominate any of the actors, although they were all fantastic, and they should have gotten, like, 4 or 5 nominations at least.
Yeah, it would have been. Wouldn't it be something to have like a Tom Jones year again at some point?
Where you have, right? Like, it could have.
The Parasite ladies, really, they could have. Wouldn't it be hilarious, like, in a good way? Yeah. Like, if they took up three of the five supporting actresses.
I think it was Manola Dargis in the New York Times who, you know, they do this feature right before the nominations where they do, if I were to nominate. I think she put four of the Parasite actresses in Best Supporting Actress.
That's hilarious.
Which is very funny, but also, yes, Manola knows what's up.
I wouldn't put all four, but they, as an ensemble, like, I think to me, like, the Screen Actors Guild award have not happened yet. I think that's next weekend, right?
It's next or maybe, Monday, yes.
And to me, it's like there's no other choice in ensemble. There really isn't. Like, of their nominees, I'm like, it's just handed to them.
Yeah.
I don't think they will, but, like, in terms of, like, a whole troupe giving the movie exactly what it needs and also idiosyncrasies and, like, depth to your individual characterization. I mean, you just can't get a better ensemble than that movie has.
Yeah. Yeah, it's absolutely amazing. And how many nominations did Parasite get? Was it seven?
Six.
Six. That's...
Yeah.
Yeah. Would have been better.
That's really good, considering it's the first South Korean movie to score.
Absolutely, yeah.
Yeah, so... So, Best Actor, we're both thrilled with Antonio Banderas. The rest of the category I'm fine with. That's all I cared about, Antonio Banderas. And I do think it's basically, I could have done without Jonathan Pryce and Joaquin Phoenix, but I knew that was gonna happen. Or, I mean, I knew Phoenix was gonna happen and I suspected that Pryce might.
Yeah, Pryce was a surprise. I think I was predicting Taron just because he appeared everywhere.
Yeah.
Once
people started talking about all the Globe sort of campaigning, I started thinking, that's not going to repeat with, you know, because like, it's a much, much harder to court, you know, 10,000 members of the Academy than the 90 members, of the Hollywood Foreign Press Association. So,
Since you want me to stay positive, I'll be very positive about Best Actor. I will say that four of these, performances are good to excellent, and that's everyone except Jonathan Pryce. Joaquin Phoenix is a fantastic actor. It's a good performance, especially the physical aspect of him playing the Joker, the way he moved his body, the way he ran, the way he danced. It was a full-body performance, so I wouldn't nominate it, but I see why people are in love with it. And if he is to win, as all indications are, same thing with Laura Dern. He's an actor. Just based on his career, he should have an Oscar. If it's this year, that's fine. I love Leonardo DiCaprio in Once Upon a Time. Remember when we talked about that movie during the summer? I was just, you know, I never think of Leonardo as this great actor that I love. But every time I watch him, I'm just like, oh, my God, he's so good. And he is, once again, in Once Upon a Time in Hollywood and deserved nomination. Adam Driver is fantastic. He is the premier actor now. So this is just... 2 years, two nominations, so way to go. It's a good category.
Even if it's not best, even if it's not who you name best, when four are very good, I'm usually happy with the lineup.
Yeah.
So Jonathan Pryce isn't bad in The Two Popes. It's just kind of like it just feels like a wasted opportunity. You could throw somebody else in there.
Yeah, they had other options this year that could have made this 5 out of 5, even if you don't love all of them. He just... feels like, you know, a wasted opportunity.
Yeah, because, I mean, it's a fun performance, but then, you know, so is Eddie Murphy in Dolomite Is My Name, if you want to go fun, and if you want to go more serious and fun, you can have Taron Egerton. I mean, there are a lot of options that they had.
I know you're not a fan, but Adam Sandler would have been a great option, too.
I just couldn't with his performance in that movie. I thought, and I'm not someone who thinks he's a bad actor. Like, I thought he was pretty strong in Punch Drunk Love, but he tried every ounce of my patience in that movie, Uncut Gems.
But I
know that's the character.
I
know that's the character, but I didn't see any, like, depth in it. So I just feel like we dodged a bullet here with that movie. But I understand other people love it, so. I'm happy for them.
Well, and it didn't do anything today, so we don't need to talk about it at all. Another nomination that I was really, really happy to see, and we can move to documentary now, is for Selma, the Syrian-British documentary that documents the war in Syria. That's done by Wa'ad al-Khatib and Edward Watts, who I interviewed. And Wa'ad and her husband Hamza, like, when you talk about the Oscar and you put the context of what these two people did and documented 5 years under shelling in Aleppo, they're real life heroes, and it's just everything else pales in comparison to what they had to go through, but also the strong movie that they managed to make while they were dealing with all of that. So I have to say that's probably my happiest nomination.
I'm everybody knows I'm not a big doc person. I don't watch very many of them, but I do read the interviews, so people should read your For Somna interview for sure. Honeyland, I was really happy about there because that is a doc I saw this year and I saw it mainly because it was in international film, and I mentioned this on the site, but it's now the very first movie to ever score in both categories.
Oh, wow, that's great. Trivia point. Yeah, and it's very good. And it's
also
one
very
of those
good movie.
Documentaries, the kind of documentary that I love, which is not a talking head. It is just recording what is happening to this beekeeper. It's brilliant. It's not that long. So if you can watch it, just put it on. It's really great. Those two nominations are fantastic. American Factory is also very good. As usual, of course, they had to snub the front runner.
I know, it's so funny. So funny.
So no Apollo 11.
Let's move to international, since we already mentioned Honeyland. This is a very strong group of films. I think most people would agree. I have not seen Corpus Christi yet, but I mean, I think it's a strong list.
Corpus Christi is like okay, like it's one of those movies you're like, okay, it's fine. It has a very interesting lead performance, but that's it. Like Atlantics, it's not as audacious as Atlantics. And this sort of just tells us that probably Atlantics was saved by the committee.
Yeah. Yeah, probably.
But, you know, happy to see Parasite, happy to see Pain and Glory. That's my number one movie of the year. Honeyland is amazing. Les Misérables is a very good movie. It's only when you compare it to Portrait of a Lady do you think of it as not good. But it's pretty good. Like, it's definitely a good nominee.
Yeah, I was really hoping to see Atlantics and Beanpole both on this list, but, you know, you can't have everything, and it's a good list.
Yeah. I mean, those would have been much, I would think those two would have been much better than Corpus Christi and Les Misérables.
And the thing that's really exciting about both of those movies is like both of like new filmmakers and very talented and very young. So they might crossing fingers, might have incredible, incredible filmographies ahead of them.
Yeah. So Maddie
Diop and Kantemir Balagov.
Yes. Film editing, which is the category that everybody says the best picture the best picture winner comes from. So could it be Ford v. Ferrari? Could it be The Irishman? Could it be Jojo Rabbit, Joker, or Parasite? Those are the five. Apparently, Once Upon a Time in Hollywood lost all its chances to win Best Picture now, if you hear people talking on the internet.
People are so silly on the internet about these statistics, because it's not like a film that wasn't nominated for editing hasn't won Best Picture. It's happened a couple times, or three times, I think. It does happen. It's just, and I'm not really worried for 1917, which might win Best Picture, because the whole point of editing was to look like there wasn't editing.
Yeah, it's the Birdman
thing.
Birdman won.
Yeah. Birdman won Best Picture without an editing nom. I think people, that statistic has been around for so long because the Oscars are 92 years old that, but I think people give it, more, you know, things have changed quite a lot in the last 20 years.
Yeah.
You know?
And to your point, these changes, the three movies that won, all were recent.
Yeah. Yeah.
So maybe we should only look at the last 5 years from now on. Something like that.
Yeah. I mean, I think 1917, I would actually be surprised if 1917 and Once Upon a Time in Hollywood are not the front runners for Best Picture. And neither of them show up in this category.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I hope that, you know, I'm rooting for Parasite, but that would be a big leap. You know, I thought if it got a acting nomination, if Song Kang-ho had shown up, which I did predict that he would, I thought mm-hmm. there was an opening.
Yeah.
Then I would be more prone to think that this could finally be the year when a foreign film wins, but
they got in for production design and film editing. I think those two do indicate some broad appeal, right?
Yes. Mm-hmm. I just worry about the acting branch, since it's the largest branch.
Yeah, but if SAG is giving us anything, is that the actors also like it.
That's
but
true.
Maybe, I don't know, maybe they just didn't want to memorize any of the unfamiliar names to them. That could be another reason why. All these white men nominating people in the Academy.
They've learned all sorts of weird names for white people. They can learn them for other people.
But,
like Benedict Cumberbatch.
But not only that, they obviously think you can't actually show human emotion unless you're white or playing Harriet Tubman. 19 white nominees out of 20. I'm not going to let that go. Acting is recognizable human behavior. And when 19 out of 20 of your nominees are white, that means you only see white as human. Especially this year, when they have so many options.
They did have a lot of options this year. You know, in the past, I've said, oh, you know, sometimes they don't have options, and then people got mad at me for saying that. But this year, they had plenty of options.
But let's move to production design. You were talking on Twitter about that you really want Parasite to be nominated, and so that happened. So that's a nice one.
It did, and it's a shock, really, if you think about it, because, yes, it was plainly deserving, but contemporary films do not get production design nominations. They always want recreations of past eras in that category. So it's really something. And, you know, and it got there without the critics supporting it either. Because even though critics supported Parasite, they gave all of their production design awards to either 1917 or Once Upon a Time in Hollywood.
Which are also pretty good nominations.
Oh, sure. Yes. But I'm just saying, contemporary films, it's, you know, such a shock when they get in craft categories.
Yeah, I mean,
and it's usually deserving, you know.
Yeah, and these
when it happens,
definitely deserving. It's so great. And then,
but I do have to say, with production design, and I am not a fan of Joker in the slightest, that movie, but it is really a slap in Mark Freeberg's face that he was not nominated, because he has been stiffed so many times. He's never been nominated. He's one of Hollywood's
That's
best
crazy.
Production designers. And I thought, for sure, he's had Best Picture nominees before. Like, he's done everything you can possibly do to get nominated, and he has never been nominated. And I'm like, do they have something against him within the branch? Like, that's, at this point, I have to start wondering, kind of like you have to wonder about, like, do actors just not respect J-Lo? Because, like, how do you deny her for that performance?
Yeah, I don't know. I can't. The wound is too raw. I can't talk to that. But Mark Friedberg, yes, I can't believe that he's never been nominated. He's done such great work with so many, like, top-notch directors that they love and movies that they have loved in, like, Joker is leading the nominations, yet
yeah.
Right here they're like, nope, that's the only one we're not going to give it.
Right. It's just like, ouch. I sat with him at an event for, I probably mentioned this before, but I sat with him at an event for Selma, and I actually fanboyed out a little bit. You know, to him about, like, how I couldn't believe he'd never been nominated, and I was so mad for him or whatever. He was very, like, very nice about it.
Oh, that's
But
nice.
He clearly didn't want to be reminded that they've always stood him. So, but he humored me.
That's cool.
So visual effects, it is interesting. That's what I want to say, even though I'm not happy with this category. It is interesting that they nominated two movies where the visual effects are sort of in supporting roles, if you will, because that is not their usual modus operandi. So with The Irishman and 1917 both nominated is kind of a surprise to me. I don't I can't really deal with the Irishman nomination, but that's a longer discussion because I don't think the effects are good. So,
but the Irishman's one of its main talking points is the visual effects, whether you like it, whether you think it's bad or wrong. And sometimes just the conversation around something makes it into the nominations. Yeah. I think I haven't seen enough movies that usually get nominated for visual effects. Like, for instance, I haven't seen Avengers, Star Wars, all these movies. So I don't have an informed opinion, but I just want to say something about the Irishman nomination here is that it could have been so much worse. Like, yes, they were sometimes, especially with Robert De Niro's body, you could see that he's an old person and all of that, but he didn't, like, all the people who were made younger did not look odd. They looked maybe a little, not 100% like they should look, but they were there. Like, to a large extent, they got us there, and it didn't bother me. So maybe that's the that's what they're recognizing, that it could have been so much worse.
Yeah. I mean, I guess my thing is that it's just another example of where I usually get, you know, frustrated with award season is the idea that a best movie is the best at everything. And to me, like, yes, The Irishman is way better than most of the finalists for visual effects, like as a movie. Like the 10 finalists, it's definitely one of the strongest movies there. Like, I would probably list it maybe second out of that batch in terms of quality. I like 1917 just a smidgen more. But I don't love any of the movies that were the finalists for that category, but it's just like, that's not what I would be voting on if I were, you know, I'm supposed to be voting on visual effects. But anyway, that's a broken record. It's like, always vote on your category. I wish people would. Because you have Best Picture to vote on what you think is the best movie.
That's true. Yeah.
All Academy members are allowed to vote on Best Picture. So I don't really understand why, you know, because people always say, oh, but this, it's their chance to vote for what movie they think is best. And I'm like, they already have that chance. And they have their category.
But maybe a branch that didn't do that and nominated only one Best Picture nominee is Makeup and Hair, because actually two Best Picture nominees, 1917 and Joker, they also had Bombshell, Judy, and Maleficent, which are in other categories, but not in Best Picture. So that makes it, you know, more than 50% non-Best Picture, one of the very few categories that way.
Yeah. And Maleficent is notable for being a sole nomination. That's its only nomination. And if you, you know, I've gone on record about this of being annoyed with the idea that Angelina's cheekbones need to be augmented. Angelina Jolie, who has the greatest cheekbones ever. So, like, I just thought that was so silly in the first movie. But that aside, the makeup is great in those movies.
I mean, it's
even better in Maleficent, Mistress of Evil, because there's more characters. The makeup's really interesting, actually.
I'll take your word for it. Go Maleficent.
You'll have to, because you're never going to see it.
And then costume design basically was the opposite. They went all Best Picture. So Irishman, another nomination for Sandy Powell, though this time she's sharing it with Christopher Peterson. Jojo Rabbit, Joker, Little Women, Jacqueline Duran, wonderful costume designer. I love her. And Once Upon a Time in Hollywood, for somebody you love, Arianne Phillips.
Yeah, Madonna's a right-hand gal, Arianna Phillips. Or Arianne Phillips. Yeah. I love all these designers in general, including Mark Bridges, who's nominated for The Joker. I love him as a costume designer.
Two-time Oscar winner, Mark Bridges.
Yeah, but that said, it's really lazy nominations. I mean, really, all Best Picture nominees, and there are so many, like, strong costumes.
Where is Ruthie Carter, again?
Yes, Ruthie Carter is my name, which I thought had a chance to win if it was nominated.
Yeah.
I thought Ruthie Carter was going to be there, like her victory lap, I thought, you know, after Black Panther.
Also, she just deserved to be there.
Yeah.
Her costumes are better than all these five.
I think. And so there's that, which shows lazy voting because they're just voting for the best pictures. And there's, the other one that was smarting about is Hustlers. I knew that was an extreme long shot, but it just goes back to what I was saying about production design. Like, contemporary films are sometimes worthy.
Yeah.
So anyway.
So do you think Ariane Phillips will finally win?
I do, actually. Given that lineup. I don't really understand the Irishman's nominations. I mean, it's fine, the costumes.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And I don't really understand JoJo's. Like, I don't dislike either of those movies, but I just don't understand the nominations.
Yeah, I mean, there was nothing exceptional about The Irishman or Jojo Rabbit, especially when you compare it to Dolomite Is My Name. It's funny if Ariane Phillips or Once Upon a Time in Hollywood wins when the most memorable image of that movie is Brad Pitt taking off his shirt. It's not about costumes at all. He's taking off the costume she made for him. And maybe that's why she'll win.
That is a pretty great 56-year-old body, I have to say. That was the special scene in my memory.
So Brad Pitt's definitely going to win. Yay. I'm 100% behind it. Supporting actor. Again, I hope Parasite would show up there, but they really love those popes.
They sure did. They loved both of them. The two.
That's
the popes, comma, two. Yeah, I mean, I'm fine with this list because I do think all five are actually, it's what you were saying about best actor. I think those are five really good performances.
It's only when you look at, like, what else could have been nominated that you then are not that happy with it. Because
like Aldous Hodge from Clemency, who's freaking amazing. But the critics didn't rally for him either, and I just noticed just barely, because like this weekend I was trying to catch up on all the, you know, critics awards and industry awards that I'd missed, and, you know, I posted the Image Award nominations, and I couldn't even believe it. Even at the Image Awards, Aldous Hodge was not nominated for Supporting Actor. I was like, what?
That's a travesty.
I mean, it just boggles my mind. But just an example that no matter what group you go to, there's something about award season that makes everyone really lazy. Because, like, you know, I liked Dolomite Is My Name. I'm not trying to diss that movie. I thought it was really, really fun movie. And I thought the actors were good. But, like, did Titus need to be nominated for Best Supporting Actor over Aldous Hodge and Clemency? I mean, that's insane to me. But anyway.
Yeah. But, you know, it's fine. Brad Pitt's going to get an Oscar for
acting. He deserves it.
Great. He looks great. He's having a good year. This is something to root for, just like with Laura Dern. So, I mean, you know, one of the things about the disappointment of Oscar nominations is that you're like, who am I going to root for the next few weeks? Because you spend so much time thinking about this and you've already have your favorites and then your favorites are not there. And you're like, what am I going to do now? But... part of like my sadness about J-Lo not being nominated is like she was my number one. Same with Alfrey. I'm like, who am I going to root for? So Brad Pitt, I guess, and Parasite, I've got stuff to root for.
Mm-hmm. I mean, Parasite, here's what I'm rooting for. I'm rooting for a year like Mad Max Fury Road 2015, where it was just kind of shocking that it just kept winning Oscars. Even though it deserved Kraft Oscars, I just didn't think the Oscars would really go there for, like, a sequel to a sequel to a sequel. But it was clearly transcending its genre and everything. It was a brilliant, brilliant movie, but it won so many Oscars. So that's my rooting for thing about this year, is I'm going to hope that Parasite magically pulls a Mad Max Fury Road and wins as much as possible.
Well, it's got six chances to do it, so...
That's right.
I think it's strongest in Best Director, and I hope it pulls that off and Bong gets an Oscar. I mean, you know, international, obviously, it's going to win that.
Right.
But I think if it's going to win two, it'll be Best Director, and I hope it does.
Yeah. I'm rooting all the way, win all six nominations.
Sure, why not? I mean, that would be amazing if it won all six nominations. There is no other film nominated in Best Picture. I'd rather that happen too than Parasite.
Yeah.
Let's go, Parasite.
Yeah, and I'm not even like a sweeps friendly person. I don't enjoy them in general, but I'll make an exception this year because it's so far above the competition.
Yes. Well, one category that it cannot win is cinematography, so which will go to Roger Deakins for 1917, but the other nominees were The Irishman, Joker, The Lighthouse and Once Upon a Time in Hollywood. Were you surprised with anything there? I thought these were what people were expecting, no?
It was mostly what people were expecting other than The Lighthouse, but I did predict The Lighthouse. I just didn't think The Irishman was going to make it because I thought it's the American Society of Cinematographers nominees except for Ford v. Ferrari's missing. Mm-hmm. So I thought The Lighthouse was going to replace The Irishman and not Ford v. Ferrari.
Mm.
Just because even though I like The Irishman, I didn't think the cinematography was something that was a clear standout of the movie. Mm. At least even in comparison with other Scorsese movies, you know, like I say this as someone who's like a fanboy for Rodrigo Prieto. Mm. I love his work, but I just didn't think it had the oomph. Plus I thought people saw it probably more often on small screens than they did past.
Yeah.
Past, like, Scorsese movies that were nominated for cinematography. Mm-hmm.
I have to say, the last couple of days, I thought The Irishman was just going to underperform. I think I was swayed by the Golden Globe shrug, the, mm-hmm. you know, everybody sort of just shrugged at The Irishman in the last couple of weeks. Like, it kept not getting all that's expected. It didn't win anything. Like, even Robert De Niro at the Critics' Choice was like, when they won Ensemble, he's like, wow. I didn't think this was going to happen because of what was happening the last few days.
Yeah. Yeah.
So I really thought that it was going to have a big miss. But apart from De Niro, who frankly wasn't ever in contention, he was not in the top seven, just going by these award bodies, right?
Mm-hmm.
Other than that, it basically got everything it was up for.
Yeah. Yeah, it did not underperform.
So I actually missed this, but I was talking to our friend Chris, and he told me about this, that Frozen 2 was snubbed from
yeah.
animated movie. So it was How to Train Your Dragon, what is it, 4, Klaus, Missing Link, Toy Story 4, and I Lost My Body.
Yeah, and I thought I was going to be so brilliant because I saw the snub coming for one of the blockbusters. Nobody else did. Everybody else was predicting all 3 sequel blockbusters were going to make it. And I thought, there's no way the Academy is going to do that. So I thought I was going to look really smart. So it turned out I was right that I Lost My Body and Klaus were both going to get in. But I was wrong about which blockbuster was
going to
get
snubbed. Which one did you predict?
Because I predicted How to Train Your Dragon, The Hidden World, was going to get snubbed. Because I thought, my thinking was, Frozen 2 is enormous and it's right now. And How to Train Your Dragon was an early release, and people don't talk about that movie. I have found, like, even though it was successful, it's not like people talk about it. Whereas I think they did talk about the first 2 installments of that series. So I thought, oh, people are just going to forget about it. But I was wrong.
Yeah. I mean, I really can't say anything about this. I only saw I Lost My Body, so I don't have much to say about this category. But I thought I Lost My Body was a completely sort of different animated movie than you usually get. It's a complete adult mm-hmm. story about, it's not about children, although it does start with a child. It's about a hand. And there is a sequence in the middle of it that is these 2 people talking through the intercom in a building, as somebody, you know, and that is a whole story all on its own. It's one of those things that I really, really love in a movie where there is a 1 long scene that can stand out and actually just be a short movie. You can just watch that scene and that's like a 7-minute short movie and you get a whole story mm-hmm. out of it that complements the rest of the story but also stands on its own. And I love that about I Lost My Body, so congratulations, Jeremy Clapin.
That's right. I have seen all 5 of these movies, and I think it's a really good list, actually. I mean, they could have done a lot worse. They could have done what, you know, Critics' Choice and other awards bodies did and just gone with the blockbusters.
Yeah. But Frozen 2 is nominated in original song.
It is, which we knew it would be. I mean,
yeah.
But I can't. You know, I'm trying to stay positive, and this category makes me so angry every year. I think the music branch, I really do think they're my least favorite branch within the Academy for many reasons, but for their complete sort of dismissal almost every year of whatever, like, indie has a really, really gorgeous and beautiful and perfect original song, they just don't even nominate it.
Yeah.
Because, like, a couple years ago, that happened to Sing Street, which had such great music, and the music that was really crucial to the movie. And you always hear in the bake-offs that those things play better than end credit songs because they're watching clips of the movie where the song is used. And yet, each year, they seem to just nominate the end credit songs and just ignore these things that are crucial components of their movie. So I just really... Okay, I just get it out. I hate the music branch. I've said it. That's the last super negative thing I'm going to say, because ignoring Glasgow from Wild Rose and denying Mary Steenburgen a return to the Oscars...
Which would have been such a great story.
And the song is brilliant, and the performance on the Oscar stage would have been so wonderful, because Jesse Buckley's voice is so beautiful.
And apparently they don't want ratings, because they didn't nominate Beyoncé. But the end credits... songs that they nominated are I'm Standing With You, First Time I Hear of It, from Breakthrough, Into the Unknown, Frozen 2, Stand Up from Harriet, double nominee Cynthia Erivo, I'm Gonna Love Me Again from Rocket Man, and If I Can't Let You Throw Yourself Away from Toy Story 4. What's your favorite, Nathaniel?
Oh, I mean, it's been a long time since I saw the movie, but I think maybe the Harriet song, although I do like the Rocket Man song too. I just don't. They're both end credit songs, so it's kind of like, yeah, you know. I prefer it when the original songs are, like, crucial to the movie, which is why I'm happy with the Frozen nomination.
Yeah, I have no opinion on this category, but the branch also nominates for score, and they nominated 1917, Joker, Little Women, Marriage Story, Star Wars 9.
Yeah, you know... After saying that I hate the music branch, I should admit that I don't know that much about music. I can play piano and I can read music, but I don't really know that much about music. So sometimes I think maybe I just don't understand, like, what composing is. But every year I find them mystifying. Like, did Star Wars Rise of Skywalker really have enough original music? It just sounded to me like all the other Star Wars scores. And, you know, with franchise movies, a lot of times you're revisiting the scores because it's, like, this emotional history that that the audience has with the characters. So you have, like, themes that replay in every movie. And I'm always surprised that they consider them eligible, the sequels. I'm, like, wondering how much new music was actually written for that movie. I don't know.
Yeah, I don't know. I do like the Joker soundtrack. I'm sorry. The Joker score. It's kind of good.
I don't mind it. I'm fine with it. Yeah. I just don't understand, you know, I don't know what number it is now, maybe fifth nomination for a Star Wars movie for John Williams, something like that. So that kind of threw me a little.
Doesn't he have like 50 nominations or something?
This is his 52nd nomination. Yeah. He is now only 4 nominations behind Walt Disney, who is the all-time leader.
Which don't count, because Walt Disney just slapped his name on everything that came out of his studio, right?
Well,
I mean, it counts, yes, but you know what I mean.
Yeah, so in that regard, maybe you could say that John Williams is the most nominated person. He's definitely the most nominated person within one type of category.
Yeah.
52 is a lot. Basically, if he's eligible, he gets nominated. That's the way it goes.
I mean,
sound mixing. I am just so happy to see Ad Astra anywhere. Mm-hmm. And that movie did not have a campaign. So you know that the sound branch actually thought about it. And nominations like that give me hope. Even though the rest of the nominations each year always make me frustrated with laziness. The nominations like that give me hope that some people in every branch are really voting for, they're really thinking about their ballot. Because they picked something that didn't have a campaign and, you know, had beautiful sound, you know?
Yep. It does have amazing sound, so that's a great nomination there. Ford v. Ferrari, I guess, was loud. That's why it's in here.
It sure was, yeah. And so was Joker.
So the movies that got both mixing and editing are 1917, Ford v. Ferrari, Joker, and Once Upon a Time. And then the editing got Star Wars and mixing got Ad Astra. Which totally makes it fine that next year is going to be one category. It's about time.
Yeah, because the branch has never done a good job at differentiating.
Yeah.
Even though they have always said, oh, it's 2 different skills. And I'm like, then why do you nominate the same 5 movies every year?
I do.
That would be like if art direction and if production design and set decoration were split into two and they nominated the same five movies for each thing, even if there were no sets, like, you know, even if it was like an outdoors movie, because they have been nominated for production design, so they have a set decorator. What are they decorating?
Who knows? I think we're both a little heartbroken that The Farewell was completely shut out, and where it could have come in is original screenplay, but instead we got 1917, Knives Out, Marriage Story, Once Upon a Time in Hollywood, and Parasite.
Thrilled for three of the five. I get why Knives Out is nominated, so I'm not going to complain about it. I totally understand why people think that's worthy, even though it wouldn't be my choice. But the 1917 screenplay, I just don't understand. It's like, yes, the movie is impressive, but the screenplay is pretty much, well.
So 1917 needed either writing or acting for it to be a real threat for Best Picture, right?
Yes.
So now it is. Now it can win it all.
Ah, heavy sigh.
It's fine. It's better than Green Book.
Sure. It's a good movie. It's just, it's one of those good movies where, you know, they think good means best. And when it comes to writing, like, I mean, it's fine. I mean, there's not a lot of story. It's basically like, here's a mission. There's not a lot of story or dialogue. It's like, here's a mission, and here's all the visually inventive ways we're going to show you the mission. But in terms of, like, a screenplay,
it's an
I just
odd
don't
nomination.
See much. Yeah. And you could have had The Farewell there, which would have been beautiful.
So, if writers, that is so beautifully written. Like, how do you not think that's, like, The Farewell's best element is the writing? Like,
for sure. And, or, Pain and Glory. Like,
yes,
he's so an Oscar-winning writer.
Yeah, absolutely. I don't get the writers. Like, why this laziness of just like, 1917, I guess, is the last movie I watched. Let me just put it down here.
The adapted screenplay movies are easier to handle, but that's probably because there were so few actual adaptations this year. It was a really strange year in terms of that, because usually adapted screenplay has a lot of options for voters.
Yeah.
And this year there really weren't, unless you count all the sequels, which do count in adapted, but nobody cares about them usually.
Mm-hmm.
There just weren't that many. Like, the only, or if they existed, they were very, very small, like Loose, for example.
All of the things that people are talking about with Little Women after the nomination.
Or the screenplay, yeah.
Does that propel Greta Gerwig to win this year?
I think it could, especially because they don't really have another place where I think it can win.
Mm-hmm.
Other than maybe costumes. Once Upon a Time will win that, but you never know.
Yeah.
You know.
But also, this could be the only category that Jojo Rabbit has a chance to win. And if they really love that movie as much as these nominations indicate, maybe it's Taika Waititi.
I mean, maybe. It could also be the only category that The Irishman can win.
Oh, it's going to win visual effects, Nathaniel.
I'm
just joking. I'm just joking.
Thank you for clarifying. So, did I say at the top of the hour that this is the most movies that have ever had over, that had double-digit nominations in a single year?
Which I think also means maybe they haven't seen that many movies, right?
Yeah. Well, that's why I was talking, like, that's why the, like, lazy voting keeps coming up in the conversation, but
yeah.
I did some preliminary research, and I think I'm accurate, but of course someone will correct me if I'm wrong. I think it's never happened before that four movies have received 10 or over nominations. The only instance I could find with a quick perusal was 1964, and Mary Poppins and My Fair Lady and Beckett all had like 12 and up nominations. So they very, very much dominated that year, but it's not usual. I mean, four movies that are nominated in like virtually every category is really weird.
Yeah, that's really weird. And these movies are 1917, The Irishman, Once Upon
Joker.
A Time in Hollywood, and Joker.
Yep.
And Jojo Rabbit and Parasite are, you know, Parasite is only six, so that's almost half. But Jojo Rabbit had 7 or 8. How many did it have? That's a lot.
It also had 6.
Oh, just 6? I thought I heard Jojo Rabbit in every category. I mean, that's just me.
Well, let's double check my math here. Best Picture, Supporting Actress, Adapted Screenplay,
Costume.
3.
Costume.
Production Design, and Editing. Yeah, 6.
Okay. But 6 big ones.
Yeah.
So we want to talk about director. So Bong Joon-ho for Parasite, Sam Mendes, 1917, Martin Scorsese, The Irishman, Quentin Tarantino, Once Upon a Time. These were the 4 everybody was expecting. And then, you know, I thought Pedro was going to get it. Foolish.
You did.
Foolish me. I believed it so much that I was so disappointed. As if they nominated him and they took it away at the last minute. I so was just waiting for Pedro's name. And I'm like, what? And
but his name would have been. Oh no! But this one was not in alphabetical order. It went in alphabetical order by the title of the movies.
Yeah, I mean, by that point, I wasn't like even looking.
Yeah.
But I thought it was with such certainty. I believed it with such certainty that I just thought it was going to be there, and I was just like, "What? Why is he not there?"
Yeah, I mean, it's pretty much expected. I should have scored 5-5. I should have stayed with my original assumption, but I. Part of me believed that they wouldn't want the imitation when they had the real thing, which my thing was Todd Phillips. And I almost said Todd Haynes. Oh, my God. Please forgive me, cinephiles of the world.
Hey,
that I almost
Haynes
said Todd Haynes instead of Todd Phillips.
He could have been nominated.
So that I just really think when you have the real thing, Martin Scorsese, why do you want the imitation, Todd Phillips? Because, I mean, like, Joker doesn't even pretend that it's not a Scorsese ripoff. It's like Taxi Driver mixed with King of Comedy. It's like all the way through.
Yeah, for sure.
Anyway.
But, I mean, you know.
But, yeah, but, you know, given what they had to work with and what the possibilities were, the only thing that I'm upset about is Todd Phillips. And even that, I'm only mildly upset because I half suspected it would happen.
Yeah. I mean, they do get the headline of no women in Best Director again, and even Issa Rae, you know, said congratulations to these men after she announced the nomination. So I'm happy they got that headline because maybe, and I was also hoping that they would get 20 out of 20 white nominees in acting instead of 19 because they need to rehaul and revolutionize the way their nominating process. So I hope these headlines, people's getting mad, and definitely they should get mad about Best Director and about the almost all white acting nominees. The Academy will do something because they had so many options this year, and they were like, nope, just the things we've always liked in all our history.
But what would they do? This is a serious question.
I don't need to think for the Academy, but they have a problem, and they need to look upon themselves and fix it. It's not my job to think for them. They need to do that.
I just wonder if we should wait another year and see if it happens again, because...
Well, it happened a few years now.
Right, but they made a lot of changes since then, is what I'm saying. So, like, that's what I'm saying. They have made a huge effort. I'm not excusing it, because Lord knows they had a lot to choose from this year. I'm just saying, we don't know. Was it a fluke? Because they do have a much wider voting pool and much more diverse than they used to, and yet they still came up with this result.
I think it's not just the pool. They need to do something with the voting process itself. That's what they need to work on next. Like, this is inexcusable. It's just inexcusable. They had so many options this year.
I mean, listen, I have long said that they should have some more strict voting criteria in some way. I think it would help in so many ways. And the only reason I haven't gone gung-ho of saying they should have bake-offs for every category is I've seen how the travesty of BAFTA doing their long lists before their short lists, and those were just embarrassing when they used to announce their finalists for acting, and it would be, like, so embarrassing.
Yeah.
Like,
I mean,
people,
BAFTA
they were...
is embarrassing, but so is the Academy, frankly. I mean, Cynthia Erivo saved the Academy. Go, Cynthia. Superwoman.
I don't know. She's pretty feisty. Like, she might decline the invitation, you know?
I hope she does. Because somebody needs to take a stand. Like, go find this interview with Steve McQueen, who gave an interview to The Guardian about the all-white nominees at BAFTA 2 days ago. brilliant interview. Somebody like that needs to take a stand. So maybe it's Cynthia. Like for BAFTA, it was Steve McQueen.
Mm. I will look that up. I love Steve McQueen. But BAFTA just, they have so many problems.
I mean, the Academy also has problems. Like, they're not that much better.
Oh, I think they're a lot better. But that's a discussion that would require an hour on its own.
But anyway, Parasite, Bong Joon-ho, all the way. Let's get that Parasite 6 out of 6. It could happen, people. That's where, now that I don't have J-Lo to root for, that's where I'm putting all my energy. I'm lighting candles, although they didn't work for J-Lo, all my candles that I lit the last couple of weeks. But anyway, that's a joke, yeah. Too. I do not like candles.
Why don't you? Don't believe in them? So I say whatever you need to do to put it out in the universe that, you know, it would be nice if Parasite won some prizes.
Well, it's going to win at least one, so we have that. But it needs to win more.
We've had so many war movies win Best Picture, and we've had a lot of movies winning that celebrated Hollywood, a lot of, like... And so, like, both of those things... I'm not saying, like, a movie is a movie. It's not all other movies that came before it. Mm-hmm. So I flat myself for making this argument, but on the other hand... Parasite is so new.
Yeah. I mean,
it's so fresh, there wouldn't have been a nominee like it. Or
you have a
winner
point
like
there
it.
In that 1917 seems like something we've seen before. Like, that was my thing about it when I saw it. I'm like, this story, apart from the magic trick of the one shot, this is a story I've seen a million times. It's stoic, heroic men trying to do the right thing. You know, we've seen it. We've seen it about British men in both world wars. We've seen it about, you know, in other wars, in other... You know, so we, to your point, we've seen it. It doesn't feel new or fresh, but Parasite does feel like that. Just the structure of it, the story of it, where it goes, the twists, the turns, everything. Yeah.
Yeah. And so, and like Once Upon a Time in Hollywood, like I do like that movie a lot, and I think it gets better on multiple viewings.
I agree. I loved it the second time more.
Yeah, me too. And like with Quentin, you can't exactly say he is a true auteur. You know, it's clearly someone's voice. So you can't really say that you've seen it before. None of his movies has won Best Picture, but they do have this tendency to, at least of late, of rewarding movies that celebrate Hollywood. Mm-hmm. So it's going to be in that vein. Yeah, in that way, we've seen something. I just don't think we've seen anything like Parasite. Is my feeling.
Yeah.
So thanks for listening. Sorry that we threw all these all these screamy things, but you're probably feeling the same way. You're probably a mix of elated and hostile today as well, out there listening.
Thank you for listening. We will talk to you soon.